Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna. I have a 14-year-old daughter. I'm a lone parent and I adopted her as a baby. We enjoy a good extended family life and have great friends. I am very aware of early childhood trauma and the effects it has on emotional development. My gorgeous daughter is well integrated into school and appears very happy overall. The main reason I'm making contact is that despite getting lots of treats and having an open fridge cupboard to help herself, she has been buying and hoarding mountains of sweets under her bed for the past few months. No matter how much we discuss it, she continues to do it. She seems to find money despite me not giving her lots, mostly in her aunt's house. Clearly it's an emotional need she has. She tells me she doesn't know why she does it, but she can't stop. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I would act on it, Sean, because, you know, I'm going to have to answer this quite generically, even though the issue is way more nuanced and it would require someone having a more in-depth conversation about the specifics of this. Because food hoarding in and of itself as a concept can be, often is symptomatic of disordered eating. Okay, so it's why anything like that, I think it's really important to respond directly and promptly to it. Not in a scolding, don't do this, there's no need, look, the cupboard's full, go there, because that's not what it's about. It's not because you're depriving her that she's doing this. It is something else. And often we look at hoarding, and food is a classic example of it, but people can hoard all kinds of things. You know, it's not just food, but it's often indicative of an emotional attachment to possessing or gathering, accumulating things, which of course can include food. Definitely not limited. If you bring to mind, there are some hoarders, there's TV shows dedicated to people who hoard. Yeah. But there's also, when it comes to food, the perceived value of food can be a part of this. And let's be honest, the sweet treats, we like to think there's no hierarchy on food, but there absolutely is. We do use sweet treats to incentivize behavior. We, you know, indulge, deprive. It's that kind of cycle. So hoarding of sweet treats, that tends to be seen as higher up in the pecking order. So the perceived value of what's being hoarded is also part of this. And we also look at hoarding in terms of, is it pointing us towards that it's an avoidance strategy, maybe to avoid dealing with something else? Now, you might not know what the something else is. And to be fair to your 14-year-old, when she says, I don't know why I do it, but I can't stop, believe her.
Yeah.
That's not a teenager saying, I do know, but I'm choosing not to tell you. She is likely not to know. It's more of an impulse than that, like a compulsion to keep repeating it. But, you know, it's also under bed. It's not a subtle hiding place.
No,
do you know what
true.
I mean?
Yes.
So it's not like she's being terribly secretive. But I also was wondering, when you say that she's hoarding all of these, you know, sweets under her bed, you're saying mountains of sweets over the past few months, like it's a pattern, okay? But is she eating them or just hoarding them? Like, are you finding wrappers or the actual sweets themselves? Because that's a part of this. I would say the best thing to do is refer her to a suitably qualified psychotherapist, psychologist who deals with disordered eating. And if you're going, well, gosh, where will I start with that? Bodywise is an excellent resource. They keep a list of suitably qualified professionals that, you know, have said, I'm happy for you to put my details on your website. This is an area and a subject matter I work with. So, and also they will have some resources and information on their website. It's just bodywise.ie that could be really helpful and supportive for you as a parent in terms of how do you approach this with her? Because the important, don't go in critical, but go in with caring, nurturing, curiosity. What might be going on? It's really important that I support you with this. I need to find out more. We are going to work on this. And you talk to your daughter that it's going to be a collaborative approach. But I would act on it.
Yeah. If she's not eating the sweets, but just hoarding the sweets, is that still disordered eating on that spectrum, or
it's probably,
could it be something else?
So it's not going to kind of be, well, she's not eating it, so how is it disordered eating? But it is a high emotional charge on food and a particular type of food. So it might not be meeting a disordered eating threshold, but it's something that you'd want to watch. What is the next step? Where is it going to go? But regardless of that, anything to do with hoarding, I would think that she does deserve a space to think about, well, what is that replacing for me and what is that representing? So I would still act on it in terms of mental health supports.
Yeah, yeah. And should she, the parent, be thinking along the lines of, well, something happened in the past few months that triggered this?
Or? I mean, I think it's impossible as a parent not to go there. You know, I think as parents, we're like investigators, you know, we're going, what could it be? What? And that's really worth doing, because when you do meet a professional, they're likely to ask you that very same question. Has something happened? But you might be thinking, no, nothing. However, what has definitely happened is she's turned 14 and a whole lot goes on,
especially
at that stage. I often find, Sean, you know, there's a peak time for parents making contact with, oh my gosh, we're having challenges, this is going on. 14 is the age. Like 14 is one of those really common ages. And it's because they're in the throes of that early adolescent phase of development. Huge change is going on or not. You know, everyone else is changing and I'm not and I don't fit. You get a lot of peer stuff. You know, that summer between first and second year, a whole lot goes on for them. Some of them come back thinking they're fully grown. Some of them really are struggling and very much still first years at heart or sixth class kids at heart. So you can have maturity imbalances there as well. So in terms of psychological, physiological, hormonal, everything else changes that are going on, simply being 14 as a developmental stage could be a trigger.
Our 7-year-old daughter has recently joined a local youth group, which we're delighted about. This group often holds overnight trips, and the first one for our daughter is happening soon. I would like to point out at this stage that we're happy for our daughter to go on this trip and trust the adult leaders of the group. However, there is a concern as we send our daughter off with a bunch of people we know only through this group. We'd like to have a conversation with her before highlighting the importance of communication between her and us and try and give her some tools to protect herself and others. We would like to make sure she's safe, empower her to spot potential dangers and to feel like she can talk to us about anything. She's very much a people pleaser, which worries us in situations like this. We've already had conversations with her about her body and private parts, etc. Any ideas about how we can approach this with her without dampening down the excitement she feels for the trip or scaring her?
I think this all sounds really sensible. You know, you've a 7-year-old who's going to be going on an overnight away. It's exciting and it's scary. It's a bit like in our house, we call that feeling skited, where you're scared, excited. It's a good time of year for skited, a lot of those feelings going on. But I don't think it's exclusive to children, because as parents, you're sounding a little skited to me as well. You know, you're excited for her going, but you are worried and there's context. So I'm not going to sit here and go, don't be worrying. But it's what you do with that. I would let the leaders of the group know that it's your first time as well and that you're anxious and you're nervous, and ask them all, and I mean all of the safeguarding questions and wonderings you're holding, because they will not mind.
Yeah.
You know, they will be more than happy to reassure you. Also, tell your daughter that, you know, she's going to have great fun. Talk about other times that she has felt that she's having fun, and where does she feel fun in her body, and how does it make her think and feel? Really get her to drill into the fun feeling, and then emphasize to her, if it doesn't feel like that, you go to one of the leaders and they will call us.
Yeah,
so you get her to recognize what fun is, and I'm happy and I'm content and I know times I've had that feeling, so that you can recognize I'm not having that feeling. It's feeling something else. So reflect on what's going to happen. You know, you're going to go here. This is where you're going to sleep. You'll be sharing a room or whatever it is, all of the details while she's away. And just add, as a matter of fact, you know, don't make a big clear the throat, here comes the big announcement, but just keep it as matter of fact as everything else you're saying. Have you got your toothbrush? Have you got this? Have you got that? Just add on that no one is allowed to cross your body boundaries. Mm. You know, the language, whatever you've used, you say you've talked to her about her body and private parts. It's really important to talk to kids about body boundaries, about being able to keep themselves safe, and giving them a language to say, hey, you've crossed my body boundary. That's not okay with me. Mm. And telling her no one is allowed to cross your body boundaries. Nobody is allowed to touch or hurt your body. If anything like that happens, or if you feel scared it's going to happen, you go to a grown up and they'll call mom and dad.
Mm.
And you say it matter of fact.
Yeah.
And if you keep it light and matter of fact, but very clear, then it's simply part of packing up her bag and going.
Yeah.
It's when we get all heightened and anxious about having the big conversation it's conveyed to them as well. And I just think, as the parents, you know you're going to have a sleepless night yourself the first night. So that's okay. Get a good movie. Just, you know, keep the phone on.
Yeah.
Chances are she's going to have a great time and come back and it was amazing. And you will relax then as well. But I don't think there's anything wrong with being anxious and alert about this as a parent.
Yeah. Our 6-year-old daughter is the eldest of 3 children, and while generally bright and active, we've observed a few concerning patterns. Though she has established close friendships with three peers in her class and has regular play dates, she often comes home upset or withdrawn. On some occasions, she becomes extremely quiet, has even stopped speaking entirely for periods, which is out of character for her. Her teacher has noted changes in her behaviour at school as well. She has grown signs of severe shyness and occasionally retreats by climbing under the table in class. She becomes highly competitive in social situations, and if games or activities don't go as she wishes, she sometimes disengages altogether. Recently, we've noticed that this shyness extends to people she knows well, including friends and neighbours in our neighbourhood. At times, she withdraws completely, even in familiar settings with familiar people, making it challenging to support her as she navigates these experiences. Despite our efforts to talk with her, she rarely opens up about these incidents, making it difficult to understand her perspective and find ways to help her. So any insight on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite the pattern there as well. Like, I mean, one of the questions you're asking, you look, would she benefit from professional support? I would say yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I, you know, I just think you've enough there to get some more insight and refer to a clinical psychologist. You could do that through primary care in your area. I'm always going to put the caveat that there are lengthy wait lists, because, and it's not because nobody's doing anything about that. It's just the level of demand is not aligned with the resources available. So we've got a huge backlog in public services, unfortunately. So if private referral is within your means, and that is to be considered because there are means involved in going private for this, do that. There will still likely be a few months of a wait, even within the private sector. But I think consulting with a clinical psychologist to just get some more insight on these struggles, because when you describe there and you're reading it out, Sean, you know, this severe shyness, occasional retreats, climbing under the table, coming home extremely quiet or stopping speaking for periods, they're just little flags that there could be some sensory overwhelm there, that actually she could be expending all of her effort and energy just to manage in school, and she's not quite making it all of the time. That's why she's going under the table. And isn't she smart to know that actually this is too much for me? I'm going to pull back and take care of myself. I would really commend her for that. But a little bit more insight and information about why she's getting overwhelmed could enable you in the school to put more appropriate supports in place so that she doesn't get to that stage and it can be short-circuited before she has to get under a table, by simply giving her movement breaks or access to a sensory room if the school happened to have one. You can do a lot of sensory work without a sensory room as well. Simple movement is a sensory exercise in and of itself. So I think that would be useful and insightful to do. And, you know, she's not opening up with you about these incidents, but she may not know how to speak to this.
She's only six.
You know, to find the words to articulate something like this is really very complex. All she knows is, I don't feel good. Mm. And she's exploring all kinds of things. Even her quietness is a valid strategy for, the talking part of my day is done.
Yeah,
I don't want
anyone
to come at me with their words. So I think there's a few practical things they could do at home with, you know, anticipated social situations like going with family or parties or whatever it is. You could get those little characters I've spoken about before and play out the social situation with her, so that through repetition of playing out the scenario, she has that, okay, I know what's going to happen. I can anticipate it. She has a degree of control over what's happening, and that can be reassuring. Consciously build in downtime to co-regulate her when she gets in from school. If she's coming in exhausted and quiet, let her be quiet. Mm. Get her a little quiet corner with some blankets or a beanbag, cushions, a little cushion corner if she likes to read, or just get some fidget toys, something that's going to help her just come back down into herself. Give her a good 15, 20, 30 minutes after school to do that, or get her outside for some movement in the outdoors. If you have a trampoline, that can be very helpful just to get her energies back up again. Nurture engagement with her is the best thing to do. So you could also invite, not the first 30 minutes she's home, wait until you have her back up a bit. Chat to her about something that made you smile today, something that made you frown today. You know, what gave you an uh-oh feeling? What made you want to dance? Made you excited? Kind of explore little nuggets, but you're not asking a lot. She can give you 1-2 word answers and that's it. I wouldn't push her though, because I think she's communicating really clearly, I'm overwhelmed. I've had enough. This is what I need. Respond to what she needs.
Yeah, indeed. Joanna, we do have another question about Christmas presents, but that's more controversy than I'm prepared to get into today.
Maybe it's that November line, isn't it?
Yeah, we might come back to that. Joanna Fortune, thanks a million.
Thanks so much, Sean.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.